It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, PacView's Melissa Burdick, special guest Jackie Donowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of May 13th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them polyhistorically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Jackie, kick us off, would you?
Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect to bring closed-loop attribution to streaming advertisers. Well, hello there, Fresh Four listeners. Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect have solidified an agreement to bring the retailer's industry-leading audience solutions and measurement to Disney's addressable streaming inventory. The collaboration will enable enhanced audience targeting and outcome-based measurements for brand campaigns across Disney's streaming portfolio, including Hulu and Disney+, connecting Walmart's customer insights with Disney's proprietary audience graph will help advertisers reach their desired audiences and measure the impact of their campaigns through closed-loop attribution.
Thanks, Jackie. Andrea, over to you.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. NBC Universal and Instacart link up to bring retail media opportunities to TV. NBC Universal and Instacart are expanding their existing partnership to include a new retail media workstream that will enable Instacart's CPG advertisers to connect with consumers via NBC Universal's streaming and linear television content. In late 2023, the companies teamed up to include access to NBC Universal's streaming platform Peacock as part of the Instacart Plus membership package. Now, with this new first-party data collaboration, advertisers will be able to reach consumers through NBC Universal's content and measure the impact of their campaigns by leveraging ad exposure and purchase data from Instacart.
Thank you, Andrea. Melissa, what do you have for us?
Amazon has announced a new country that they're opening up. Amazon has announced that it will launch a new dedicated website for Ireland in 2025. Currently, most Irish customers use Amazon sites based in the UK or other European countries. The company said the Irish site will mean that users will be able to avoid additional customs charges and currency conversion fees, and it will also lead to faster delivery and returns for many items. All right, over to you, Peter.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys.
Welcome again to the CPG Guys podcast. It's Sri and PVSP, and we recorded this episode from high atop the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. We were both there to attend the 2022 Grocery Shop Conference. Peter was as excited as I am to be together in Las Vegas at the premier digital grocery event for CPG and retail. About 4,000 of our closest industry friends joined us in Las Vegas, including our Fresh Four co-hosts, Andrea Lay, Melissa Burdick, Brian Gildenberg, the host of the Gildenberg Omni Comet, and even Risa Crandall and Jennifer Silverberg from the CPG Scoop podcast. Man, it was a long 3 days. But before we get to our guests, let me remind our audience that all of our content can easily be found by visiting cpgguys.com. We have a brand new website with all sorts of rich content and episodes organized into themes like retail media and loyalty, so do check it out on the browser. If you aren't already following us on LinkedIn, please do so, because you'll be joining over 17,000 other industry professionals on an entertaining educational journey. Also, we manage two closed groups on LinkedIn, CPG Commerce and Retail Media Professionals. Over 1,000 plus professionals have already joined us, so please do consider doing that yourself. Of course, we're on other social media platforms, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. You find all our content there easily because our series is called Knowledge Drops, which is intended to be a fun way to learn about our industry. How do you find it? By searching for CPG Guys Knowledge Drop on the search bar. And do remember to check out the FMCG Guys podcast, hosted by our friends Daniel and Efrain, who take the CPG Guys podcast format across the pond and speak to retail and FMCG luminaries from a European perspective. Do that by visiting fmcgguys.com in a browser and check out the latest addition to our family, the CPG Scoop, hosted by Jennifer and Risa. They conduct snackable conversations with industry veterans, a fun way to discover what's new and next in CPG commerce and marketing. Visit cpgscoop.com to learn more. Peter and I are proud to partner with Next Up, also known as the Network of Executive Women in a Past Life, whose mission it is to advance all women in business and to promote the cause of gender equality and career development. Please visit nextupisnow.org/cpgguys to learn more about this great group. We did tell you at Women's Month this past November 2022 that Peter and I, to the CPG guys, are true partners of Network of Executive Women known as Next Up. We are going to be sponsoring 50 memberships in 2023. So do get in touch with us once 2023 is here. Much more to come about what those sponsorships are and how you can be a member of Next Up and take advantage of the many services they offer. Here to speak to us about this very evolution of how brands are truly becoming omnichannel and the world of investments and acquisitions is Ray Chow himself, a serial entrepreneur who is also an investor, board member, advisor to a number of founders in all things e-commerce. Man, I said a lot. You're doing a lot of stuff, Ray. In one of his roles, he also advises e-commerce founders at Clearco, who's the world's largest e-commerce investor. We're going to decompose what that means shortly. Ray also sits on the board of GoBold, a venture-backed 3PL and last-mile delivery business servicing large enterprise brands like none other than IKEA, which may be at your home. Ray also advises a number of the e-commerce-related companies within the SoftBank portfolio. I can't wait to get this dialogue started. I've waited for a while and I'm convinced, Ray, that if he comes to a podcast, it's the CPG guys. I believe this is your first podcast appearance.
You managed to get me out of...
There we go.
Yes.
There we go. So I can't wait to get this dialogue started and engage Ray as we decompose the why behind so many digital native brands trying to get into the retail shelves from the digital native starts. What's happening in the M&A space in general around this digital native startup area? And of course, the hardest part about all of this last 2.5 years, very difficult macro environment. So if you're a small brand, how do you scale? So please join Peter and me in welcoming to the podcast none other than Ray Chow. Ray, how are you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. Good to see you both. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. So before we get to the questions that Peter and I have prepared for our conversation, Ray, would you give our audience a brief overview of the history at Clearco and what Clearco does?
Yeah, happy to. A few years ago, after we sold our last business, started working with a couple of friends who had founded Clearco. And if you don't know what the business does, since its inception, it's now funded, I think, maybe 6,000 or 7,000 plus e-commerce businesses, but not in the form of equity. And so non-dilutive capital, meaning they'll give you the capital that you can use to go fund your ad spend, inventory, and you pay it back as a percentage of revenue. And so Clearco doesn't take an equity stake. Great for founders. They get to keep, you know, the entire cap table, and you get to get the capital to fund and grow the business. And so a fairly, I would say, innovative way of financing, but now, you know, a ton of other sort of players have entered the space copy.
I couldn't agree more, man. Innovative way of financing. Like, what's your role at Clearco?
Yeah, I mean, I was mainly advising the founders, which I do. They're also a SoftBank-backed business. I advise a few other SoftBank companies as well in e-commerce. And but one of the areas I helped them was really around building an M&A practice, because they were funding all of these businesses. And a lot of them just didn't have clear paths of, well, how do I sell my business? What's the eventual exit? And I knew a lot of the buyers in the ecosystem, like private equity firms, strategics. And then a few years ago, there was just this emergence of like these roll-ups that were popping up. I'm sure, you know, a bunch of people who listened to this podcast got calls from these aggregators. You know, essentially it was building an M&A practice to sell these businesses. Because for most founders, they just have no idea what to do other than operate their companies. But, you know, true dollars are made through liquidity events, through exits and by selling companies. And so that's largely where I was helping them.
Do you know what a liquidity event is, Peter? Have you ever talked about this before?
I may have heard of the concept of
interesting,
liquidity.
Interesting.
I'll have to check that out.
The innovative idea on how the funding model works is fantastic. I wonder if it's a first in the industry at the time that it was found. So thank you for that. We will, of course, include links to Ray's LinkedIn profile and the Clearco site in the digital liner notes of this podcast episode. So I'm going to jump right in and decompose everything, small brands, startup brands,
sure,
e-commerce, last mile delivery, funding models, all of that.
in this power-packed episode, and Peter, as always, will come on you at the end to summarize it for us. So let's start with you, Ray the person. You have a plethora of experiences beginning as an engineer by training, trading at Barclays Capital, to then becoming a founder, starting and successfully selling a number of businesses yourself as a serial entrepreneur. Tell us about this interesting journey from engineering to starting and selling businesses and now being an advisor.
Yeah, I don't know if it was so much planned or engineered, but you know, I think a lot of it was confusion, more of just pursuing my curiosities. Grew up in a strict, you know, Asian Chinese family, but really,
I might know someone else in this room who grew up
exactly,
in a strict
right?
Asian family.
You know, we were told only a few options that were available to us.
Engineer was one of them.
Engineering is one, so I think I hit maybe 25% of our options pool, but. Ended up trying out a bunch of things from consulting to working at tech companies to working on the trading floor, and I just didn't enjoy them. So decided to start building companies. Made a ton of mistakes. We sold some businesses. We've been buying a bunch of businesses. And lately just been finding a lot of interest as well, helping other founders and funds. And so that's primarily where I've been spending most of my time.
Gotcha.
Sri, do you know what happens when I told my Episcopalian mother what I was going to do when I graduated was I was going to get a major in the politics and psychology of terrorism? You know what she said? Okay.
Yeah.
Well done, Mom.
I know she would have been thrown out of my family if I had said that. But
in any event, Ray, so it's
if I had said psychology at home, they'd have asked me if I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
I don't even know.
Actually, I will say this. That's not entirely true. My mother, who was an economist, and my father, who was an economist, said, you went to liberal arts school. Why would you get a degree other than economics? But that's the real truth. But,
yeah.
But they were okay with it once I said
it. And I will chat later. You said 25% of the available pools, there's 75% more. Doctors, one of them.
Yeah.
We can close the loop later after this episode. What
lawyer,
the other 50 are.
That's it, yeah.
Lawyer, there we go. We've got 25% left. Over to you, man.
Ray, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for joining us. And it's funny you mentioned the SoftBank when I'm not podcasting. Obviously, an employee of Fetch Rewards, a mobile loyalty platform, which is, I think, hopefully one of the star jewels in the SoftBank investment portfolio. So that's always a good thing. Anyhow, I want to get in now that we have a fundamental understanding of what your company does and what you've been doing in that respect. I'd really like to understand what you're seeing these days. Is the rapid economic growth starting to wane? Since COVID, we've emerged from COVID, we're shopping in physical stores again. Is it leveling off? And how should brands be reacting to this? Should they be leaning in, or is it time for them to sit back and say, let's see where the dust settles and we'll figure out what to do next?
Yeah, I think it's a complex answer because you have to look at the different parts of the brand world, right? And so I spend time with direct consumer businesses, which are typically small businesses. I also spend time with large packaged goods executives. And I think stories are different, right? So in direct to consumer land, companies have been decimated in the last, call it 9 to 15 months. Mm-hmm. I think what people don't talk enough about, which I was sharing with you guys earlier, is Facebook and iOS and the issues that happened last year. Mm-hmm. Have literally destroyed companies, right? So companies that depended on Facebook as an acquisition channel, their economics are broken. Just can't make money unless you have maybe recurring revenue or subscription, which is very rare for most businesses. And so that combined with macroeconomic forces of no more stimmy checks, consumer demand's not the same, people have less money in their bank accounts. You've just got a confluence of forces. And even if you're flat or growing in your top line, your bottom line's probably eroding significantly. And so real challenges there. I think if you look at large brand world, obviously you guys know this better, but there are some that are doing okay, probably around grocery is sort of one category. But I think the issues are the same in that profit erosion is everywhere. Things cost more to acquire customers, it costs more to deliver products to the end consumer, and people have less money, right? So you might see some growth in certain categories, but I think all in all, like people are struggling. Like it's a it's a real, real challenge right now.
I think for digitally native brands, it's been my experience that there's a limit to the growth that you can have. At some point, if you want to cross that chasm, you're going to have to do it through physical retail. And that's why you see companies like Harry's moving into Target and the like. And that's just one example. Yeah, have there been Amazon millionaires and billionaires? Yeah, they have. But yeah, for the most part, if you want to scale, you have to. If you want to scale, you have to be omnichannel. That's what. Yeah. What do you think?
I think there's also even a step before that, which is, you know, there's a ton of buzz around direct to consumer, right? The Harry's, the Warby's, etc. But if you look at the overall e-commerce pie, it's only I think it's like 10 or 15% of overall e-com is like Shopify direct to consumer, right? The rest of it is, you know, retail e-commerce, right? Which is selling through Amazon, selling through Walmart.com. But it's, I don't know, maybe less sexy to talk about the bigger pie, which I think, you know, needs to get more attention, because if you're a direct-to-consumer brand first today on Shopify, I think your first step is, how do I get onto Amazon, or how do I get onto Walmart.com? Which these founders are, you know, fighting to do now because Facebook's not a viable channel for them. But then I think after that is going into wholesale through brick and mortar. But I think that's sort of the evolution of what's happening.
I don't think I'm an unusual shopper in that if I see something on social media that I want, I don't click. I click to see, learn more, and I see what the price is. But the first thing I do after that is I toggle over to Amazon and I see, and guess what? Yeah. Invariably, I'm going to find it at 20, 30% cheaper, and it's a source that I trust, and I'm going to buy it there because it's one less thing where I have to fill out a form.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're special. I think it's you and another.
You don't think I'm special? I'm not special? You're always telling me I'm special.
So let's come back to this D2C, emerging native digital world, right? What are the basics of success? What would you tell them? You know, you talked about the adversity period now, last 9, 12, 15 months after the iOS kind of security thing, call it what you may, privacy, call it whatever you may. Acquisition has become a nightmare.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we've screwed supply chain up pretty badly in the world, which means you can't acquire consumers. And even when you do, you don't have product to sell to them.
Yeah.
So what would be your advice on the basics? What should they focus on, brand founders?
Yeah, I think the world is finally coming back to first principles of you have to sell something that, you know, is higher than what it costs you, right? And
hey, about that, man. Yeah, you know, sell something higher than it costs.
The 101, right? And, you know, the venture community, which has funded a lot of these businesses, has sort of come to a screeching halt, and people are no longer deploying capital in these direct.
Is it really that bad, Ray, where it's just absolute like a brick wall at this stage?
It is terrible. You know, the direct consumer founders pretty much can't find additional dollars from an equity perspective.
Wow.
And so lenders in the space or players like Clearco, they're getting a lot more business because they don't take equity and they're sort of the only sources of capital that are available. But these venture investors are pulling back because if you look at the public market comps, you know, Warby, Allbirds, all of those guys who got public, they've dropped 75-80%, right? And that really messes up your multiples. And so they are sort of stepping back and saying, look, I'm not going to deploy any capital until I see a rebound in this because it's just not the valuations that I expected these investments to turn out. And so I think what that's forcing now is, you know, the markets are just rewarding businesses that are more profitable. And that's not just in direct-to-consumer. It's across the board. The market's just rewarding profitable businesses. And so I think going back to your question, I think the advice is, like, you need to not only understand how to make profits, but you also really need to understand cash, right? And that while you may have profitable or EBITDA, like, you may not have cash, right? Which is
a big one thing,
right? And, you know, every dollar of profit, most of these founders plow it back into inventory. And so that, I think, is incredibly important. You talked about supply chain issues. You know, I think we're actually at another challenge right now, which is during 2020 and 2021, these brands couldn't get a ton of inventory and they were getting a ton of demand. And they just thought that everything was going up and to the right and that they're forecasting, you know, sort of this up and to the right amount of demand. And so they overordered. And now they are sitting on a ton of inventory and consumer demand's come down. And so, you know, that's all tied up.
About disappointing investors, that's got to be rough.
Exactly. I mean, that destroys businesses, right? And so I think that's where there's a real challenge. And it's not like you can fight your way out of this by acquiring customers cheaper, because Facebook and Instagram are now an expensive acquisition channel. And so a lot of these founders are stuck, and I think a lot of them are going to go out of business.
Sri, I think the only happy guy in this is Tom Fishburne, the cartoonist known as the Marketoonist, because he loves to draw those crazy charts.
I like Calvin.
You like Calvin?
Since you were asking.
I didn't.
Oh, you did? I missed her.
So Ray, in addition to startups, you also serve on an advisory board for Grocery Shop Talk and Shop Talk. Would love to hear, since we're here recording at Grocery Shop, would love to hear more from you about your role in this and how you see this particular, it's now three, there's a Shop Talk in Europe, how you see this particular format as being contributing to the growth in our industry.
Yeah, I got to know Shop Talk and Grocery Shop. I think you guys also know Anil, who's a founder, and he's been a friend and mentor, incredible entrepreneur.
Yep.
About a year or two ago, it asked me to join the advisor board to help them sort of shape the agenda and identify who would be great to speak. So that's largely the role I've been playing. But I think the important part of Grocery Shop and Shop Talk is it's bringing sort of this, I would say, still early-ish, stage community together and finding ways to advance it. Just the comment earlier around like retail e-commerce, right? It's a big part of the e-com pie, but certainly doesn't get the same energy and love, right? And I think, Grocery Shop is putting a lot more of the limelight on that industry. And so I think it's a great thing. And, one of the things that I'm also building out is a retail e-commerce trade association right now, again, to help, shape this industry in a bigger way. I feel like there's more that needs to be done in recognizing the incredible leaders in the space and, helping people understand how to advance in this industry because it's still early. You talked to a lot of CPG executives around org design and finding talent. It's like, I actually don't really know how because, it's not like, heads of e-coms were, built 20 years ago, right? And so everyone's sort of defining this as they go. And I just think a lot can be done for this industry. And so as big as it is, I think there's a lot more that can be done.
No, you won't get any debate from us. And
yeah, I mean, you guys are perfect living examples of trying to advance.
You spent about a decade, Peter, in this space, evolving from brick and mortar world. Now, of course, I've come back a whole circle. But in any event, right, I just think what you've called out is a very important thing that I'll point out for the audience, which is if you look at the whole pie of digital, I'm going to say digital became sexy because of D2C. And hence,
totally.
The mind gravitates automatically. But then you also pointed out that in today's economic situation of the world, the most important thing for D2C is gone are the days of I can take a bunch of losses, be a little less stressful about cash flow. It's all about the books at this stage.
But I've got clicks don't matter anymore, Sheree?
Apparently not. And besides, you can't get clicks because of the iOS issue.
It's true. That
so
true.
It's like a double whammy, right?
Yeah.
In that sort of environment, I think it's ripe now. The time is ripe for that 85% pie that Ray referred to. And there should be a lot more attention about that unsexy world.
Yeah.
And we need to make it sexy. And that's what we're going to try and do.
And you drive digital influence in that 85% of
absolutely.
The market where it's where the sales are occurring. And
if
you don't do it, there's that company out
of
Seattle and a bunch of others that will figure out how to do it.
All distribution opportunities for brands,
totally.
Right? So I want to go over to e-commerce aggregators because right up top, before we started this recording, we were chatting with you. We talked about the many a millionaires come out to e-commerce aggregation.
Yeah.
Amazon platform, eBay, many other platforms, third-party marketplaces, etc. And of course, many of us in our audience has also received calls from these heavily funded startups in the last couple of years, all in the pre-COVID kind of era, right? Can you tell us what you're seeing today in this space? And how is this going to all go forward? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? What happens?
Yeah. You know, I think as with many new industries or categories, there's always this sort of rising, you know, excitement, but almost a bit of a bubble. And, you know, I think these aggregators, you know, there are probably over 100 of them now. Most of them buying Amazon businesses, like small third-party sellers on Amazon, businesses that private equity wasn't buying. So, you know, sub 40 million, sub 5, 10 million in profit. These aggregators are buying them. And they're buying, you know, like literally every week you'd have people buying, you know, an Amazon business. And I think mid-2020 was really peak acquisition mania. Really, I'd say once interest rates started going up, once we had change in consumer demand, no more stimmy checks, all of that, acquisitions literally, I'd say Q4 of last year, just halted. And, you know, it's continued. It's only gotten worse. And the challenge is that most of these aggregators are funded using debt. And the lenders in the space require that your companies are still growing in profit. Because that's how they're financing the acquisition. Yeah. The minute they see that your profits are declining, you're starting to breach a lot of their debt covenants. And in lender language land, like, you don't break covenants. Once you break a covenant, they have all the power to tell you what to do and what not to do, right? And essentially the message is, look, I'm not going to let you buy any more businesses right now because your core portfolio is struggling. Right. And, you know, there was this whole thing around, well, these aggregators, they have this machine and the secret sauce and all the talent that can help operate these businesses better. And, you know, I think it's sort of like, you know, come out that you really can't beat these macro forces. Right.
So if they can't buy any new companies, how do they dig themselves out of this hole?
They have to operate their existing businesses. And that's a challenge. Right. So some of them are selling off, you know, bad performing assets. A lot of them are actually, if you read the news, like, are just letting go of a lot of their own talent.
Yeah.
That machine that was supposed to be really good.
We're seeing it time and time again now.
Exactly. And because the only way to improve performance is by, you know, cutting costs. And that's the only way to sort of help them get their profitability back up. And so you're seeing this industry that rapidly, like, literally billions of dollars plowed into this industry in a very short period of time. It's just sort of slowed down significantly. And so, you know, I think that we are past the peak period where founders who sold last year or, you know, mid-2022 probably had the highest valuations. I don't think it'll ever get back to that period. I think it'll go back up because it's just gone so low.
Have we hit the valley, though?
I don't know if we've hit the valley. There's really not much lower that you can go, right? Because a lot of these companies are being bought for, you know, 3 to 5 times EBITDA or profit, right? And, you know, it might have been at 5 or 6 during peak, and now it's at 3, 2.5. You really can't go that much lower, right? Because as a founder, if you offer me 1 times, like, why would I sell my business? I'd rather just wait a year, you know, or 2 years to make that money, right? So, you know, I think we are in a pretty low period. So I think it will go back up. Will it go back to, you know, peaks? I think it's going to be really hard.
Sri, I'm really glad to see that you guys chose not to do debt financing to grow our business.
Well said. Or sell the company in the last
of course,
months.
Given the
We're
going
to wait, man. We're going to wait.
Given the fact that my 3.5-year-old daughter owns most of the convertible notes, we just have to keep supplying her with chocolate milk and gummy bears and we'll be in good shape.
Do we have to wait till she's 18?
Yeah,
because
that's
a long way
that's
out.
A good point.
Vertical note's pretty sophisticated for a.
I tell you, she's a smart one. She's moving into preschool this week. It's a big event for us. Pretty soon, I already said to my wife we're going to do college tours in a couple of weeks. So you've worked for a couple of VC backed companies, and you've worked for venture funds. Let's talk about that particular area. I've got one of my dearest friends is in tech focused VC firm. Where do you see that particular, we've talked about equity, we've talked about debt-financed aggregator. Where do you see venture capital going in the foreseeable future?
So I think unlike the great financial crisis where I think, you know, largely a real estate-related asset class, I think what we're going through right now is just hitting almost all industries, I would say. similar to what's happened in the aggregator world and in direct consumer, I would say just tech VCs have really slowed down their deployment of capital. A lot of it is, like, you look at, again, public market comps of every SaaS company or tech company, it's dropped, right? 50, 75, 80%, right? And so for many of the same reasons as direct to consumer, there's just been a ton of pullback. I think that, great companies are still getting funded, maybe not at the same crazy multiples. I think it's reverting back to the mean of what it should have been, but I think valuations are going to change significantly. But you're just seeing most VCs just sit on capital. There's a ton of dry powder on the side.
So they've got the fund. They're just not pulling the trigger on any investments.
Absolutely. People aren't chasing deals anymore.
They're not going to get the multiples.
So multiples is one thing, but I think there's also just a concern of falling knife and, what's going to happen to these companies that I'm deploying capital into. Are they really going to continue to grow? Do they have strong unit economics?
So the RPO market's dead.
I think it'll be dead for a couple of years.
Like, you really think it's going to be 2-3 years?
So if I'm a tech CPG startup founder, is it different for me? Or am I facing the same world? I'm not making product that people buy every day. I'm a SaaS platform, tech-based, something of that nature. Am I facing the same world?
I think if you're a SaaS player, I think similar issues are happening. I mean, the best companies are still finding a way to get capital, but I'd say it's like a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage. Because the issue is you look at all these tech companies, right? An Affirm or, a DoorDash or, even the best ones like Viva, like they've all come down, 50, 75%. And so... Instacart, right? Workday. Like, there's just everyone's getting destroyed across the board. And so, at the end of the day, these investors in the private world are going to look at public market comps as a valuation reference point, right? And it trickles down. And so, it's incredibly challenging across the board.
Well said, Ray. Let me remind our audience that we're speaking to Ray Chow, an advisor to startup founders, investor, and also board member in businesses related to e-commerce and digitally native brands. So I already feel like we've gotten so much. This is a power-packed episode. We've gotten so
talking about aggregators. We talked about debt financing. We talked about venture capital. We've been
the world.
We've run the gamut.
We've run the gamut, but I got much more for you, Stuff.
Sure.
So many of us recently saw the acquisition of Hero Cosmetics by Church & White. It looked like a great transaction at the surface level, and for all those involved, probably. Do you expect to see more of these great transactions while it shifts the shifting landscape of digital native brands in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, Ju, who's the founder of Hero, is a friend, and also one of their biggest investors, Trevor Nelson from Aria, incredible investor as well. That was an incredible business, but it goes back to one of the things that we were talking about, which is a very large chunk, if not a majority, of their business was actually Amazon. They're in brick and mortar. They weren't like your typical direct-to-consumer business, right? And unlike, I would say, the 98% of other direct-to-consumer businesses that were venture-funded, Hero was making real money, right? I forget what the financials were. I think it was like $110 million top line, $40 million EBITDA.
That's you're going head-to-head with larger brands.
Exactly, right? And so, I wouldn't have been surprised if they had a bunch of bidders trying to buy that business. I think businesses with that profile will get bought. I don't think there are that many of them, though. And I think that's the challenge. I think so many are.
So if you're a large brand, then you try to incubate, because if you're a large brand, you're sitting on working capital, you're sitting on cash flow. You try to do this yourself, or is this still a skill set issue?
I really think it is a skill set issue, that the skill set involved in going from 0 to 1 is just very different from like 1 to 100, right?
It's unfortunate though.
It is. And, I think companies have tried, right, to build in-house incubation and all that. And I think it's a nice effort, but it's just hard, right?
You don't see
the incentives. The incentives are off, right? Like, if you take a secondment or if you work on, this new startup, like, unless you're getting startup founder economics in this, like, what's your incentive to build this into a big success, right?
If there's no IPO and there's no incentive there, why are you jumping ship to take a lot less? Yeah, I understand.
Exactly.
So it's challenging to draw talent if there's no tremendous upside. So the talent will tend to stay where they're going to be rewarded, and they're probably going to be more likely rewarded if they stay to scale.
Exactly. And I think as well, these numbers just don't mean a lot to large CPGs, right? Like, if you're doing, let's say, 10 million in your first year, what's the CEO of the company, the CFO, going to say, oh, that's cute. Like Pampers did that in 2 hours, right? Or something like that, right? So,
and I may know somebody who's dealt with all these problems the last 10 years of 10 million wasn't good enough, so.
Exactly, right. So
is he a podcaster?
No, okay. I do not know.
Ray, so I remember this visual that I saw on LinkedIn a couple of years ago, kept getting reposted. It had Procter & Gamble in the center with all of its logos, and then it was showing all of these insurgent challenger brands, D2C, kind of eating away at the business, and it talked about how D2C was going to take on Procter, and it was going to take on Nestle, and it was going to take on Unilever. You're talking to a lot of big scaled companies.
Yeah.
Is that fear of challenger brands still real for them, or has it subsided?
I think it's subsided. I think that was a totally it was a nice slide to drive a lot of attention.
Look good. It had a lot of logos.
It was great to get people to talk about.
Logo slides are great. Everybody wants to reshare those.
And people like to throw fear, but I think you talk to most CPG executives and they look at D2C, it's like, well, why would I do that? Right? Why would I lose a ton of money? This is not, like a customer acquisition play where hopefully one day I'll monetize. Like, if I throw away profits, I'm going to be punished in the public markets for that, right? I think there's very few transactions that they're going to do, and they just don't see the upside in betting and when you're worrying about them, right? Like, I think the reality is, like, distribution is incredibly powerful. Like, you just can't beat a General Mills, a P&G, a Unilever on that distribution, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to overthrow, and so. I think there's a ceiling to how big these businesses can get. And that's why like Hero sold, because now they can increase distribution, right? But on their own, incredibly challenging, right? And you're just going to tap out at a certain size. Right?
Dropped a couple of truth bombs over there about distribution, the importance of it for scaling. And then I think the more powerful one is, if you're running a large public company or you're part of a large public company, what's the incentive to actually now get into the DC world? Thinking, you're really doing it for the customer acquisition part to say, hey, 7 years later, that's going to really give me some yield or some sort.
Right.
I think the belief that scale brands getting in D2C to grow their business from the D2C component is just erroneous. We know what it's for. It's to get, as one of our dear friends, Brian Gildenberg, said in a recent video we caught with him, this is truly about understanding how your consumers are behaving. Right, in a digital world, and then using that and applying it to how you deal with your omnichannel retailers, and really helping you in your broader business, not necessarily to generate copious amounts of profitable money from the actual D2C sale.
Is that the Thursday's Gildenberg Omnicom?
The Gildenberg Omnicom.
I've heard of it before.
Isn't that a Robert Ludlum novel?
Is it?
I thought it might be.
Not sure. Rudyard Kipling?
It might be.
Poetry? No.
So we've been kind of half glass empty in a lot of our conversation. We've been kind of talking about the doom and gloom. It's not really great. Would love to know from you what you see as being really next in retail and e-commerce. Are there things that are really exciting you in terms of the innovation you're seeing in this space?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think as crappy as it sounds, with the world, I actually think it's just reverting back to where it should have been, and there's actually a lot of great things that are happening. It feels bad because it's recency bias, right? We're all going through this pain.
Sure.
But I think, iOS and Facebook has created a big hole, and I actually think TikTok is going to get really interesting. The fact that they've gotten this.
Hallelujah. The CPG guys have a TikTok channel. Told you so. Thank you.
Now, I don't know if it means it's going to get really interesting by the fact that the federal government is going to step in and shut it down, Sri. That could be what's
happening. You've got 100 followers. How about that?
We have 100 followers. We are on our way. Watch out, Kim Kardashian. We are coming for you.
I think they realize that there's a big opportunity for them to help these digitally native brands who can't rely on Facebook anymore. How they do it is going to be interesting, right? And they have other pressures, as you've mentioned, that might make it hard to win in the U.S. I think that's one. I think, you know, in retail e-commerce, though, the part that I get excited by is that I think that there's a lot of technology that's now being built, right? I think it was once started really by agencies and humans, and now I think software is going to come in. I actually think a lot of consolidation is going to pop up as well. I don't think people want to deal with like 50 different vendors and have a solution here and a solution there. We know the guys at Commerce IQ, they've been making some acquisitions and are consolidating sort of that tech stack. I think more of that is going to come, and I think it'll be good for the industry, but I think it's still super early days in retail e-com.
There have been some great innovations we've seen. We have a great vantage point here in the CPG guys because we get to see things like Google type searchability of videos. We get to see live streaming plugins to legacy Shopify platforms that make it very easy for brands to get on board. There is a lot to get excited about.
Full funnel acquisition to conversion platforms all built into
one. Shopify Media.
We talked to Guru back in August of 2022, and Guru referred to Commerce IQ as being that 85% pie that you described.
Right.
Trying to bring it all together from the omnichannel world perspective, the e-commerce world first, but instead of 30 solutions, how do you get one platform?
Yeah, that's
right. For that 85% world, which I think is a very good opportunity, by the way. So I'm going to wrap this up with probably the question that the listeners really want to hear from you the most. Given your amazing experience in the space and how eloquently you've been describing what the world is today and the fall of 2022 from a D2C, digital native, scaling perspective, a bunch of truth bombs. What is your advice to startup founders who want to run the race with large-scale CPG brands? And what would differentiate them?
Yeah, I would say that I don't think you should try to compete with large CPG. I think it's one thing to be an entrepreneur and to have the freedom to do what you want, when you want. But if your goal is to win, I don't think you compete with large CPGs. You can't. It's really, really hard.
So he's myth-busting the stories that exist in the industry that you can take over P&G and...
Good luck. Good luck, right?
Well said, right?
You know, I think it would be great. But I think there is just so much distribution power in these businesses that it's incredibly difficult to overtake. I think that... You know, it's been the last 10 years, right? And no one's really been able to. People are trying. Like, Harry's is now starting to acquire businesses, but there's still so much distribution power, right? And I think that's hard to overthrow.
And the distribution power is fueled by the investments that these companies have made in the ability to execute at retail, the ability to put together promotional programs, to deliver that to their retail. And that is just not easily replicated by scale.
Incredibly hard.
You can't just buy a sponsored listing ad and expect that that's going to have the impact.
Exactly. And I'd say one other thing is real R&D, actually. Because most of these digitally native brands, they're not really building something different. And the ones that do, I think, do have something
they're
to make.
They're finding weaknesses and trying to exploit them versus truly doing R&D.
It was a distribution play of, well, no one's acquiring customers on Facebook, so I'm going to build this for Facebook, right? And I'm going to find that manufacturer in Alibaba, and that's my play, right?
And Ray's full of truth bombs today. You got a bunch. Yeah.
So I think it's hard, right? So it depends on what your goal is, but I wouldn't compete against large CPGs.
Yeah. Awesome. So let me remind our audience that all of our content can easily be found going to a web browser, typing cpgguys.com. If you think you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to our community here on the CPG Guys, drop us an email. Easy contact at cpgguys.com, and maybe you can join us on the podcast right here. Don't forget to drop us a rating on cpgguys.com, easily found by going to the top of the menu bar on the homepage of our website. Thank you to all our followers. We know you love us. Thank you for all the love you are showing us.
Yeah, how many do we have now?
16K plus on LinkedIn. And I do want to, and of course, LinkedIn is a niche
that
audience.
Our
thank
moms,
you for that.
It?
Yes, so it's 15,998.
Yeah,
it does include
plus moms. Yeah. Plus
I started my mom a LinkedIn account so she could follow
that
us.
Nice.
How do you know they don't like your content and they're not part of the
industry? Good question. We got to ask them that. Do you really like our content? She did ask me when I was home in India back in August of 2022. What a CPG guys t-shirt.
She likes
and
our
mug.
Her sweat.
And a mug. She's getting greedy. She's getting greedy. And a mug. Ray, I want to sincerely thank you for coming to the show and dropping a bunch of truth bombs and knowledge bombs for us. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And it's the first podcast appearance. Ray, I have a feeling he's going to be in many more podcast appearances after this. Because people are just going to ask him after listening to this.
We've created a monster.
We may have taken the private out of Ray, made him public.
There we go.
We talk a lot about private and public. So how do you like that?
I
know I'm trying these days.
Just keep it up.
Thank you, Peter. So it's your turn.
All right. Yeah, this, to quote you again, Power Pack episode, lots of truth bombs drop. Boom, boom, boom. They were going off all over. I love the fact that your company, Clearco, has funded 6,000 plus, almost 7,000 companies through non-diluted equity financing. That's a really interesting approach. We've heard of private equity, we've heard of venture capital, we heard SPACs. Remember the SPAC thing that was going on this year? Now you don't hear about SPACs anymore.
I saw one of my friends
SPAC
actually
my wall,
get a
that's
SPAC
about
deal.
As close as I got to it.
And my two friends, one of them got a SPAC deal.
Yes, I remember that.
And one of them lost out on the SPAC deal due to which the company has recently closed. So
it's a tough time. Companies are struggling scaling their business in a post-COVID world. Brand founders should be really focused, according to Ray, on selling products at a price that's higher than it cost them to make.
Shocker.
I know. Shri, we got to start telling people about this idea. It could be revolutionary.
A decade ago, this was flipped.
The fact of the matter is venture investors, they're falling back. The margins aren't there, and that's having an impact on valuations. And as a result of that, the markets right now are clearly rewarding profitable businesses. You have a really great example where Hero was able to be acquired.
And cash flow.
And cash flow as well. You have to manage the cash flow. That's the critical element. I love the fact that I'm going to want to learn more about this offline about creating a trade association around the space. Because Shri and I have been actually, in all seriousness, we are serious every once in a while. But we have something.
Is it Shri and Peter or the CPG guys?
The CPG guys. That's right. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to. We weren't speaking in the third person. But anyway, I think that's a very intriguing approach. Aggregators. Wow. They've been focusing on companies that were typically making less than $40 million a year. And the high times were pretty high there for a while. But they're all starting to come very close, if not already having broken covenants. And that means the money for them to acquire more businesses is drying up. It means that they're having to cut headcount, and they're not doing the kind of things that a lot of that great talent came to do. Same with startups, which means that these big scaled brands and companies that saw a brain drain and a talent drain disappear during the heyday of the last 5 or 6 years are now actually starting to probably see people wanting to stay because the returns and the equity in a world where we're not seeing a lot of IPOs happen, it's just not there. So why would I walk away from a great deal here? And it's just an absolutely fascinating time. Venture capital in particular, they've got money. They're just not allocating it because right now, where are the returns going to come from?
They're not seeing the returns.
They're just not seeing it. So rather than dump the money anywhere, they'll just sit on it.
I didn't comprehend the seriousness and the depth. Maybe the seriousness, not the depth of how the iOS platform switch on the privacy angle has really changed.
Yeah, but the thing is, think about Sears and Roebuck, right? Sears Roebuck made its business and its success on revolutionizing a different business model, right? And what happened to them? They got defeated by the likes of Amazon. It's just evolution of business, right? And to sit here and say that these companies, you know, they played according to the rules, the way the rules were. The market and the conditions change, and if you don't evolve, it's very Darwinian, right?
Absolutely.
I think the one thing that Ray said that really caught my mind is, listen, if your goal is to win in this market right now, compete with the big guys, you just don't have the resources to win in distribution particularly. That, I think, is probably the most sage advice that we can give to
R&D.
These brands. Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to win because you have a better product, not because you found, to your point, Sri, you're focused on a minute opportunity to arbitrage at a particular moment.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Peter. Pleasure doing this week over with you. I knew when I asked Ray, I had to get him out of this private shell to be here, and I knew if I would be successful, we would get more content than you and I could handle.
Okay.
And that's the way it went. He's gonna be a star on the podcast. Just mark my words.
Okay.
Mark my word. Folks, let me wrap this up by saying thank you. It's a pleasure to have had Ray with us in person at Las Vegas at Grocery Shop 2022 in September 2022. And we'll see you soon on another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.